I couldn't watch him and drive at the same time. With every mile marker I passed, I felt more and more nervous about potentially dropping by the baby shower. I wasn't invited, and by the time we got back to my house, I wouldn't have time to get ready at all. I lifted my body to see my face in the rearview mirror. I didn't look like complete shit. Little red specks of acne still covered my cheeks, but my skin was clearer today than it was the day before. I would only have time to throw some clean clothes on and possibly apply some mascara, concealer, and lip gloss. By the time we pulled into my driveway, I had convinced myself not to go. He knew I would try to get out of going, I knew I would too, but it still felt nice to daydream about going with Kale. I didn't think he would make a thing out of me canceling, more than just the typical told you so, but I didn't care about that nearly enough to be tortured socially. He waited by his truck until I unlocked my front door and propped my screen door open.
I'm surprised your door is locked,
he called from the edge of the driveway. Are you sure you don't need me to help you? I offered as he unloaded the stuff.
Just keep the door open,
he yelled back. My neighbor Bradley walked out onto his porch, looked from Kale to me, nodded politely, grabbed the newspaper that was lying there, and went back inside. I wondered if he knew he could read all that online. He seemed like the kind of guy who wouldn't realize that, or at least, wouldn't care to. I nodded to Kale, and he lifted the chair out of his car. I popped in to move the old chair I'd been using out of the way, and as he walked into my place, I tried to think of something to say. Whenever he was around, I found it hard to not feel the silence, even in my small living room. I pointed to the spot in my living room where my other chair had been moments ago, and he gently placed it there. Kale eyed the old chair in the corner.
You're not throwing that out, are you?
I nodded. Yeah, it's old and creaky.
It's so comfortable, though.
I laughed, remembering Kale's long legs dangling off the edge of it as he slept with it reclined. That felt so long ago. I wondered if we were thinking the same thing. It felt like we were. You can have it if you want. His face lit up. It was more of a reaction than I expected over an old chair that I'd taken from my dad's when Estelle remodeled their house.
Let me pay you for it.
He reached for his wallet.
Or just take that cash you owe me from the chair, chair for chair.
Chair for chair? I teased him. You're getting ripped off here. But I'll take it as long as you know that.
I'm aware.
He smiled.
I like that one. I slept like a baby in that thing.
I imagined Kale sleeping in a sleeping bag on the desert floor, his body having to adapt to the extreme climate change during the nights. Kale looked at his phone right as I said, "Take it. Be my guest." I waited a couple seconds while he texted someone. Finally, he looked up.
Last chance to go to the baby shower.
As jealous as I am of the fun you'll have, I have stuff to do. It's almost over, and I don't have a gift or anything. I don't even have real shoes on. Leaning against his new chair, Kale looked at me.
Okay,
he said, exhaling a deep breath with the word. Okay, I repeated.
I can tell them you said hi.
He shrugged. Then they'll know you saw me. I don't want that, because Elodie might feel bad, and I'm tired, and have been out all day, and... He lifted his hand to stop me.
I get it. I won't mention your name. I still think you should go to give them all a big fuck you. I do have to go, though, since it's almost over.
Go ahead, I said too quickly. My neck started to prickle. I wanted this confusing day to end.
Okay.
He laughed softly. I liked that he wasn't pressuring me, but also kind of wanted him to at least try to convince me. God, I was all over the place.
I'll drop the plants inside before I go, though.
He was on his phone again. I wondered if he'd really just found out about the shower and whoever the distraction on his phone was, and if they were there waiting on him. I wasn't a part of the platoon's little group like he was, so I didn't know much of anything. Whether he spent a lot of time with them or not, he was at least in the platoon and was friends with a lot of the guys. My mind started down the path of a conspiracy theory that Elodie must have told her army wife group about me and Kale, and my chest started to burn.
Karina, you good?
Kale asked. His voice brought a slice of reality back to me. My mind always went to the most extreme places. I wished it wasn't like that, but it always had been. Yeah, I said, my voice tight. Kale would notice it. I knew he would. And when he then looked at me, he would say something, his lips touching my ear, like when he woke up in my bed telling me,
"Are you sure, though?"
he asked.
"Not talking about me and you. I'm talking about you, just in general."
He stood in my doorway, still as a statue with his square jaw set. I nodded. "Yeah, I'm just tired. Today was a long day. Well, the month has been long, and I have to work in the morning and shower. I'm fine. Really?" Kale sighed and rubbed his fingers over his smooth chin.
"Okay. See you around then?"
"See you around then," I repeated. He hesitated before he spoke.
"Karina?"
I looked at him. "Yeah?"
"Your hair looks really good like that,"
he said, pointing toward my head. Self-consciously, I ran my hands over my hair. He grabbed the old chair he was taking by one arm and wrapped his other one around the back of it. I stood there, not sure what to say outside of a mumbled, "Thank you." He carried the chair out of the living room without looking back. I left the door unlocked so he could bring the plants in and waited in the kitchen until I heard the door close again. I was all over the place, and he was confusing me more than ever. I was supposed to hate him, to never even consider speaking to him again, yet the smile on my face wouldn't fade. I pulled the door shut tighter and locked both locks. I put the TV on and turned the volume up so I couldn't hear Kale's truck roar away from the curb. Now that I was in my little house again, alone, the plants were way less exciting than they had seemed earlier, most of their magic lost. The chair was still as beautiful as ever, at least. I sat down on it, touching the fabric as I tried to relax and not think about the baby shower, and Kale, and how damn weird the day had been.
Chapter 19. Kale. The baby shower turned out to be more beer bottle than baby bottle vibe. Essentially, it was a backyard barbecue with a few baby-themed decorations here and there, which was fine, but it hardly differed from the typical good luck theme of an on-post barbecue. When I first pulled up to the house, I wished that Karina would have agreed to come with me. Or that I would have stayed at her place just a little longer or talked to her more, asked her more questions about how she was and what she'd been up to. Part of me liked to have her as my little secret, but that was selfish. I hadn't introduced her to the guys' wives, but I knew the women would like her attitude and maybe even be inspired by her independence. I knew these wives weren't her crowd, but they weren't that bad, and at least Mendoza and Gloria would be around. If Karina would at least try to be friends with people, she would actually like Gloria. Their van was parked in front of the house right next to Lawson's green Mustang. Lawson was that kind of fucking guy. Patriotic Army stickers decorated his bumper like he bought them in bulk, and a pair of fuzzy dice from the WAC era of the 2000s hung from the rear view. I rang the doorbell, and Tharp's wife, Tony, answered immediately. She was a tall woman, mostly legs and a big smile. Her cheekbones were harsh but pretty, and her eyes were blanketed with lack of sleep or too much to drink. I couldn't tell just yet.
"Martin, I can't believe you actually came," she said, hugging me.
She smelled like a keg of beer and the glittery body spray my sister used to wear when she was in middle school. I pulled away, but with a smile. "Thanks for inviting me." Tony's brown eyes were pretty bloodshot, as were those of the other women on the back porch standing with Elodie. I walked by their separate clusters, waving, and stopped to double kiss Elodie, who was describing to Fisher her love for American television. They were having the classic Friends versus Seinfeld debate. I shook Fisher's hand and looked around the yard, wondering if his sister would tell him I had been with her today. Everyone else was huddled in different pockets on the sloping grass. The food table, the grill, the sitting table. About 25 people in all, though I would have thought it would have thinned out more by this time. The yard smelled like tobacco and gristle from the grill. "We have plenty of food left," Tony told me. "And drinks, beers are here." She pointed to a blue plastic cooler on the ground. "Thanks, I just ate," I lied. I wasn't hungry. I was fucking worn out and wanted to lay my ass in my bed at the soonest possible convenience. My leg was throbbing as I stepped off the deck and started walking down the hill. I was driving, so I declined the beer, too. "Martin!" Mendoza patted my back with a beer bottle in his hand, the one that wasn't fucked up. He was leaning against the wooden fence, and Gloria was sitting a few feet away in a chair, a can of Coke in her hand, and her eyes on the kids playing in the yard as I walked over to say hi. They were running around with a bunch of bubbles and threw a sprinkler with some other kids I didn't recognize. When Mendoza's kids saw me, two out of three came across the yard to say hi. Viviana, the middle one, ran up and wrapped her arms around my legs. My right leg ached when her bony arm pressed against it, but I couldn't bring myself to say anything to her. She was just so cute. So I smiled down and tried to keep a straight face. I had been painless until a few minutes ago, when the rush of adrenaline from seeing Karina had faded away, and the ache popped back up, and the burning crept into every thread of my muscle. I looked up to move my focus to anything else. I had plenty of experience avoiding pain. That's what war was, finding ways to not acknowledge the pain you were experiencing. You couldn't focus your brain on anything but army-taught instincts and the gruesome art of war. If I thought about that, even for longer than a few seconds, I would remember the young girl in her hijab carrying a little boy's dead body in her arms, his face covered in dirt and blood. There were so many casualties every day that the boy could have been her brother, or she could have just found him on the street. I blinked to get that shit out of my mind. The pain. It was the pain that I associated every war memory with, and sometimes when I wasn't paying attention, it would hit me. I'd been having these flashes more often the last few days. Maybe it was the freshness of the encounter with Karina's dad, or Mendoza yelling about the unfairness of it all as he punched his hand through the glass of his back door. It wasn't that I didn't feel the overwhelming, crushing guilt of war, but I could rationalize my choices for the most part. I didn't know how, or why. I was so lucky to not completely snap like some did. Not yet, at least. I didn't understand what I was doing, while I was doing it. That's what I told myself. I was back in the tent again. I could almost taste the salt on my sweaty lips and smell the thick smoke in the air from the latest IED explosion. My skin started to prickle as I traveled back and forth between reality and my trauma. I'm here, at Benning, home. A drive from my ma and sister, a drive from Karina. I'm not there anymore. I thought about what I was told in group therapy, to breathe, to count and breathe, and look down at my feet, grounded to the green grass here at Fort Benning, not the dirt in Afghanistan.
"Martin, hi! We were waiting on you so long. My daddy said you weren't coming, but I knew you would."
Viviana practically shouted, wagging her little finger in disapproval. She stood in front of me and lifted her arms into the air. Her face was morphing into the little girl from my memory in front of me. I had to snap out of it. Fuck.
"Hey, Daddy, I told you he would come. I'm always right,"
she yelled across the lawn. Her voice was right below me, but sounded like she was talking through a tunnel. I thought about today's events as a way to bring me back to the real world. The hours I spent polishing wood for Elodie's crib, the surprise of seeing Karina, how she looked going from stall to stall with no idea I was following her. I could feel her calmness as she browsed through the market. I missed the energy she brought to me. The pull back to reality wasn't instant or easy, but it was close enough to come back to the present, as I had to once again step over my past.
Hello?
An impatient Vivi jumped in front of me, and I tried to play it off like I'd ignored her as a joke as the feeling came back to my legs, my grounded boots on the grass. I laughed and looked ahead, purposely ignoring her for a second, then stuck my tongue out. I lifted her into my arms and pushed the pain back into the past. I was stronger than it was. Holding her right now proved it. Viviana's legs wrapped around my waist. Fuck, did holding her hurt. But I ignored the screaming of my muscles. I knew I shouldn't have lifted the plants or the chairs, but at the time it felt so good to have my strength back. I was not used to this weak body yet. I refused to ever get fully used to it. Who told you I wasn't coming? I asked her, pointing at her dad, who had now moved on to liquor straight from the bottle. I told him I would be late. I dipped her body down and she squealed. I barely noticed the pain. The youngest boy, Julian, had been waving to me from near the back fence for a minute before I noticed. I waved back as his sister continued wiggling in my arms. Julian didn't seem to want to leave the bubble machine he was playing with. I couldn't blame him. A stream of fresh bubbles wafted past his face, a few catching on the dark curls hanging down his forehead. He laughed, and I took a relaxed breath, watching the happiness on their youthful faces. Then I looked back over at Mendoza, a father who had even more demons than I did. I knew these kids' lives weren't always this full of laughter and sunlight. There were mostly dark and stormy nights, with the stress of unpaid bills and their dad's on and off absence due to the army. When parents come in and out of their kids' lives, it impacts them. I knew some of the best, strongest parents who did everything they could right, and I still saw the difference in their family when they would come back from deployment. You adjusted to life a certain way, and then they came back and threw things off balance, and a new routine began. No matter how happy the soldier's family would be to have them home again, the transition was always a struggle that no one really talked about, and it was fucking complicated. Plus, now they had a whole new beast to deal with in his PTSD episodes. His bandaged hand was a fresh reminder for us all.
They're so messy,
Viviana pointed to a group of five soldiers I didn't seem to recognize, bears in their hands, rowdy before the sun was even down. She was too mature for her age, but with her mom's strength and fearlessness to call people out, even adults, I didn't worry much about her. I hated being around fuckers like them. Lawson. He was almost as bad as Jones and the rest of the rednecks in our platoon. I was one of two black men. Mendoza was the only Hispanic, and the rest were white dudes from Boston, Alabama, Kentucky. Some were cool as hell, some not so much. I found it funny that none of them noticed me staring at their backs. They didn't feel eyes on them like a good soldier should. It never really turned off, that instinct. Not for me, anyway.
I was working on my present for the baby, I whispered into her ear.
What's the present?
She whispered back, not so subtly.
You can't tell anyone, okay?
While I waited for her to agree, we both looked at her oldest brother, Manuel, or Little Manny, as we all called him. Standing there, he was the opposite of his sister's sweet, toothless smile. He met me with a stone expression. He liked me too, but he wasn't affectionate like Viviana. Mendoza had told me many, many times that Little Manny felt his absence during deployments most of all. More than his wife Gloria, even. He looked like a spitting image of his father. Dark hair, dark eyes, worry heavy on his mouth.
Tell me,
Viviana finally said, her childish excitement loud and clear, and right in my ear. Thank fucking God I could barely hear out of the right one most of the time. Rocket blasts, night after night, would do that. Little Manny couldn't hide his smile any longer as his sister giggled. Gloria had walked over and joined us. She looked tired, beautiful, but like she needed to sit down and not move for hours. She was more made up than usual. I was used to midnight Gloria, in her pajamas or sweats, panicked as her kids woke up from their father's screams. In the sunny backyard, she was wearing ripped jeans and a black t-shirt tied up to show her stomach, a jacket around her waist. She had makeup on, a lot of it, like she was trying to cover up her exhaustion. She looked good, though. She always did. Half of the guys gave Mendoza shit for how hot his wife was and how hot he was not. When they wanted to know how he got her, their being high school sweethearts always came up, and people nodded jokingly. She loved him, though. Man, did she love him. I didn't know if I had ever seen people love each other like they did. They were the definition of ride or die. I'm building a bed for the baby. A crib, I told Gloria's mini-me. Gloria nodded at me, smiling at her kids. She was looking at Julian and speaking in Spanish.
Can you make something for me?
Viviana asked. Her mom and I laughed together. You always want something, little girl, her mom teased. Don't be a beggar. What do you want me to make you? I asked. She thought about it and wiggled down out of my arms.
I don't know, a bed or a princess chair?
Princess chair? Got it.
Martin, get the fuck over here. Stop playing with the kids and come have a beer,
Mendoza yelled. Mendoza's daughter ran over to him, and I followed behind her. She climbed onto his lap and wrapped her arms around his neck and his heart around her finger.
What's up, man? About time you got here,
he said by way of fucking with me. I was at the market, I said, and his face changed.
You still go there?
I paused, looking around. No one except Elodie could have heard us if they tried, but to be honest, she would need to get used to this kind of shit once her man came home, because he would be bringing a lot of baggage with him. I wouldn't say this to him or her, but his getting her pregnant was a bad fucking idea. For her mostly, but also for him. He could barely take care of his own damn self, let alone a wife and a baby. When Phillips told me how they got married fast, I lost my shit. I thought he was joking. That he met this hot French girl online and was going to just date her briefly as an online sex thing, like most dating that happened during deployment. The last thing I expected was for him to get her pregnant and move her across the world to Georgia. I wasn't trying to be a dick, but it was way too soon for him to have a baby. He was a baby himself. But then it was none of my fucking business. So after my initial surprise, I kept my mouth shut.
Jerry Seinfeld is one of the best and most successful comedians in American history,
I heard Fisher say to Elodie. Elodie looked happy, content, and nothing like she had in the emergency room. I had texted her after I saw Karina and Austin leaving and stopped by her room. I really wanted her to be okay. She had a tough road ahead.
I'm not saying it's not great, but the humor in Friends is the best. It never gets old. It tells a story with each episode. It helped me a lot with my English, actually.
Her French accent made me immediately agree with her, even though I otherwise knew Seinfeld was the superior comedy.
And Jerry Seinfeld has nothing on Adam Sandler. He's America's,
Elodie began to say. I turned back to Mendoza as she entertained Fisher, explaining what on earth Adam Sandler had to do with the argument. Mendoza looked impatiently at me. Yeah, I still go there. I usually stay on the supply side, but today I ran into Ms. Rosa. She asked about you, I told him. Mendoza's eyes were cloudy from the dark liquor in his hand. His jaw tightened. I was either pushing a hot button, or he would at least feign being chill about me still going to the market, even though he couldn't. I knew he cared about her.
How's she doing? I can't believe Randy won't let me back in. I thought he would get over that shit by now, man.
Yeah, one normally just gets over you driving through their fence and booths, I said lightly, like it was funny. But when it had happened, it was terrifying. And Mendoza was so hammered that day that I thought he was going to continue on and drive right onto the highway after demolishing the fence. Mendoza had been chopping wood for Randy, Rosa's husband, and had almost cut his own fingers off, which made him get pissed and go to leave. He shifted into the wrong gear when he tried to back up, ramming his van into multiple stalls of home building materials. And it didn't stop there. When he panicked, He drove straight toward the trees, barely missing Randy's car, and going straight through the fence. It was a miracle the insurance covered it. A miracle and some lies. And that happened before the second tour to Afghanistan and all the shit we saw and the shit we did. Mendoza took a long sip from the bottle.
Yeah, but I told him I'd work for free, cleaning shit up there, so I don't get it.
I shrugged. Give him time. It's only been a few weeks we've been back. Chapter 20. An hour into my time at the cookout, masked as a baby shower, a few more people had taken off, leaving only a handful of us in Tharp's backyard. All of the kids were long gone, save Mendoza's. The pack of young privates were taking shots of Maker's Mark straight from the bottle. Jack Daniels and Maker's Mark. Two things you could always find at a gathering of soldiers. The red wax seal of the Maker's bottle had been tossed into the grass. Mendoza's son Julian grabbed it with his little hand. Gloria, while also holding a sleeping Viviana on her lap, picked it up before he could put it in his mouth. She reminded me of my ma, never sitting down or clocking out of her maternal shift. She always did so many things at once. I'd even seen Gloria eat lunch while breastfeeding and telling a guy off who'd complained about her feeding her baby in the restaurant. Gloria spoke her piece while sipping her iced tea and feeding Julian, and the man reddened and scrambled away before she even raised her voice. Personally, I was more grossed out by him talking with a mouthful of rare steak, his saliva flying out of his big-ass mouth, than by her covered feeding. But sure, go off, sir. She got to him before Mendoza or I could even start.
Be careful, my love, she told Julian, tossing the top into a bowl full of mostly broken pretzel sticks. And y'all need to be careful. This is supposed to be a baby shower. If my kid chokes on anything you throw on the ground, I will be choking you.
She looked around at all of us, even me, who was completely innocent. I watched as she looked for her husband inside when she spotted him taking another drink. He had moved on to coke and bourbon and was shooting the shit with the privates. I knew a few were tankers from another platoon in the company, but didn't know them by name. He was far from ready to leave, even though his wife looked beyond exhausted. Gloria, I waved to get her attention. You can go. I'll make sure he gets home. It's late, and I know the kids have school in the morning. She looked at him and then to Julian sitting next to her, little Manny standing nearby and Vivi in her arms. Wally shared his father's name and was undoubtedly his mini-me. Little Manny's nickname also came from his parents calling him Little Man, and somehow it changed to Little Manny and stuck, despite him being the oldest child.
Are you sure?
Yes. You know I'm more than capable of getting his ass in bed. I smiled, though we both knew it was usually far from funny when I dragged him in after a hard night. Tharp's wife was sitting at the table, trying to keep her husband from getting another beer out of the cooler. As he leaned forward, the plastic chair wobbling under his weight, she pulled on his shirt to bring its legs back to the ground. She huffed and puffed but didn't say anything. I was pretty sure she was embarrassed by Tharp's behavior. I sure as hell would be.
Would you stop? The kids are asleep and we're at home. Chill out, he told her, swiping at where her hand held his shirt.
By the look on her face, I thought she was going to backhand him, but she just pulled her arm away and stormed off into the house. She slammed the door as he lifted the cooler top and shoved his hand into the melting ice and freezing water. Gloria looked from the back door right at her husband.
You know what, Martin? I'm going to take you up on that offer.
She stood, shifting her daughter on her hip. Vivi woke up and wrapped her legs and arms around Gloria's body.
Little Manny, can you help me get your brother in the car? Grab that bag, she said as he agreed. Manny, she called to her husband. I'm taking the kids home. What? No, stay, baby!
He held his arms up, reaching for her. She hesitated for a second, but ended up giving in to him, smiling at her idiot husband. He was her idiot, and mine. He was a good dude at the end of the day. She put Vivi down and walked over to him.
I'm tired. Martin's bringing you home. Stay, babe. Not too late.
She wrapped her arms around his neck. His hands rounded her ass and she licked his lips. They were always like this, all over each other in public. I looked away as Karina popped into my head, her hands running over my cropped hair, her teeth tugging at my earlobe as she climbed on top of me. Even just kissing her was more intimate than sex. I rolled my shoulders, trying to get her out of my damn head.
Oh, I'll hurry home, Mendoza said, biting his lip. Can y'all believe that's my wife?
Mendoza roared, clapping his hands as Gloria strode away. Little Manny rolled his eyes. He looked so much like his dad, it was crazy. His broad nose, the shade of his skin, the wide shape of his jaw. They're gross, I told him. He agreed with me, even without a smile. I could tell by the way his mouth twitched that he wanted to laugh. He was a stubborn little shit sometimes, just like his old man. Mendoza kept his eyes on his wife as she said goodbye to everyone else and kissed the back of his daughter's head. As they walked by, he fist-bumped the boys. He was so gentle with Vivi, but tough with the boys. It was how he was raised, the same way that I was, even with a single mother. Boys had to be tough. Girls were delicate. Treat them accordingly. I knew firsthand how toxic the idea of what masculinity and being a man was. It had the power to eat a man alive and had been destroying families since the beginning of time, especially in my community growing up. So many single mothers were struggling, but no one ever seemed to say absent fathers. It was all single mother households instead of absent father. I sat quietly, waving goodbye to the kids and Gloria, drinking a Sprite from the can and listening to the conversation the circle of guys were having. Most were single soldiers. And those handful who were married had worn out the patience of their wives, many of whom had left already.
I mean, we're going to go to war with Iran. It's going to happen in the next couple years, especially under this administration, one of them said.
I took them all in, what they were wearing, how drunk they appeared, judging by body language and speech. Fisher's voice was in the background debating with Elodie. He was only a little buzzed. He had spent the whole hour since I arrived with Elodie, which I much preferred to him getting wasted with the rest of the group. I listened to their conversation, even as my main focus was on the group of privates. My brain was trained to clock every detail of my surroundings, whether I meant to or not, whether I wanted to or not.
Don't talk about your boss like that,
one of them said. He seemed the youngest and looked eerily similar to the cartoon character Ferb. Red hair, sort of triangle nose, a straight-up cartoon character.
He wasn't the boss I enlisted under. I don't want anything to do with his bullshit propaganda and fear-mongering,
another said. He was lanky, sort of square-nosed, the Phineas to his companion's Ferb.
Fear-mongering? He's opening our eyes up to all the shit the government does, and he's giving more jobs and protecting what this country is supposed to be.
Ah, good old talk about the president. It was always a sore spot for soldiers and their families. Legally, we weren't even allowed to talk about the president publicly because of our contracts with the army, but it usually didn't stop people from actually doing it.
Fear-mongering? Come on, that's a liberal-ass stance to take even for you,
Ferb said.
First of all, I'm not a liberal. I'm usually a conservative until this election, but this dude is a straight-up child and so fucking embarrassing, throwing temper tantrums on Twitter all damn day like he doesn't have anything better to do. He's whack, and you're whack for defending him. Didn't your grandpa serve in World War II?
The short one nodded.
Imagine how he would feel if he was still alive, seeing all these neo-Nazis marching the streets and being encouraged by the president. Not just any president, but someone who is proud of how he escaped serving in the military. Not only that, but he also disrespected John McCain, a prisoner of war. What would he say? Huh?
The soldier's eyes were shining with the kind of gleam only passion or whiskey could give. He had both running through his veins.
Fuck off with this talk. We are supposed to be brothers here. Why are we worried about some lazy piece of shit in office when they aren't worried about us? Only worry about each other. Mendoza said, waving his drink around the circle of men, butting in before I could decide if I wanted to or not. Mendoza approached them. One was looking down at his phone, barely paying attention to what was happening around him. This baby shower could break out into a brawl, and he would barely notice. It seemed like it was about to. The other two were looking at the Ferb kid. "He wouldn't be happy," the tall one continued. "He would be wondering what the fuck he risked his life for if we were going to go right back to this. People in the streets doing literal Nazi salutes while claiming freedom?" Mendoza interrupted again before the other guy responded. "So do something about it instead of being the government's puppet. You bitching about it doesn't change it. You want to change shit? Go fucking actually do something about it instead of sitting around bitching about some shit that we can't control. We're on their payroll. The blood is on our hands." I stood up from the table and walked over to the group. It was getting too heated for the amount of alcohol everyone had had. Not to mention this was supposed to have been an event celebrating Elodie. Yet Fisher was the only one actually talking to her. "We can change it by voting and not putting up with this shit," the taller guy said. Fisher and Elodie had fallen silent and were watching the guy's heated exchange. Elodie's hand was on her stomach in a protective sort of way. "Not putting up with it? How are you going to manage that, huh? You are the government's property. There's no choice whether to put up with something or not. You do what you're told, just like the rest of us," said another private who looked like he was fresh out of basic. Tall guy spoke again. "Why don't you ask him about the wall? You want that wasteful wall built, don't you? Tell Mendoza that. Look him in the eyes and tell him that." I stepped into the middle of the circle. Okay, guys. Mendoza's face hardened. "I'm from fucking Cali, bro. My family is from Mexico. You're ignorant as fuck, like the wall. You need to watch your mouth." He reached out and ripped the whiskey bottle from one of the soldier's hands. This was going to get ugly. I could feel everyone's adrenaline winding up. It was affecting me, too. My body was morphing into fight mode as everyone's body language had changed. I tried to toss water over their fire. One trip to the ER this week was enough. "You're still going to deploy, you little bastards," I said, "and you'll be sitting over in that goddamn sandbox bickering about the same shit. And who's going to have your back?" They looked at each other. "It's sure the fuck not going to be the president or any politician. Doesn't matter who the president is. This shit has been going on since before we were born. This is what's important. Not some fucking Oval Office that knows us by a number. Even if you die, it doesn't matter who the president is. To him, his biggest reason for not wanting you dead is because death tolls influence his stats during his term, not because they want you alive. And not just him, all of them. We are all we have. So stop turning on each other before you get all of us killed next time we deploy." "We aren't deploying. Last I heard, they're pulling troops out," the quiet tanker said. I knew by the symbol printed on his shirt. There were soldiers who just never turned it off and branded themselves as soldiers in every part of their lives. I laughed. "Oh, yes, you will. Maybe not in the next 6 months, but your orders will come soon enough. Now vote for who you vote for and stand up for what you stand for. But stop ruining Elodie's fucking baby shower." I looked specifically at the tall kid. "But don't let your politics stop you from doing your job. We're the boots on the ground, not them. So stop letting it divide us so everyone doesn't get killed. Because guess what?" I looked at these boys who wanted to be men so bad. "At the end of the day, some people will just be on the wrong side of history, and that's their burden to carry. You had your reasons for signing up. We all did. Now either shut the hell up or go to a bar. This is a goddamn baby shower." Some of these kids were total shitbags, and I knew it must have boiled their blood to be told to shut up by a black man. But I dared anyone to say anything to me that was out of line. I learned within my first year enlisted that arguing with other soldiers over politics wasn't going to change their minds.
People usually needed to actually see shit for themselves to open their minds, and even then, some people just didn't change. But one thing was clear. In the army, political arguments got you into nothing but a fuck ton of trouble. It could ruin your career or get you killed. Yeah, well, from what I heard, you won't be deploying either. The tanker smirked, looking down at my leg. He turned to the other guys and they all smiled. The tall one even laughed. My hands clenched at my sides. So everyone knew that I was disabled now. Word traveled to them and got them thinking they were better than me now because of my injury. I was no longer Martin, the 21-year-old E5 who saved lives and got promotions and medals faster than everyone else in the company. I was the useless vet now, a disposable, disabled, black, useless veteran. Mendoza rose up, pressing his bottle into the tanker's chest. My mind was in fight mode, but my body was still.
You better watch your fucking mouth, all of you.
His whole body shook as he threw the bottle to the side. It shattered as it hit the concrete patio. Tony had come back outside and she screamed as the glass flew near her feet.
What the fuck?
Tharp rushed to Mendoza. I moved between them before Tharp could lay a finger on Mendoza. Tharp would thank me later. His wife, too.
Guys, guys, guys!
Fisher pushed through, grabbing Tharp's shirt.
Come on, look at her,
he said, nodding to Elodie.
It's her baby shower, you fucking idiots!
Elodie seemed worried, even as she smiled, looking across the group of us men. She was scared. I could sense it.
Don't you know we're all doomed anyway? Fisher continued.
He reminded me of his sister and her idea that doom was imminent. I guess both of them were taught by their mother and her stories, threaded with promises of punishments from the sky.
Back down or get off my fucking property,
Tharp threatened Mendoza, the bear giving him extra courage.
Watch your fucking boys then. I guess you didn't tell them who the fuck I am, because they wouldn't be threatening me if they knew.
He raised his fist, still wrapped in a bandage, and slammed it against the palm of his other hand.
None of you want to fuck with me,
he yelled, hitting his hands together again. I reached for his arm and yanked him back. He stood still, not fighting me. He was homed in on them. Mendoza lifted his hand up, looking straight at the boys, and used two fingers to make the shape of a gun. The tanker flinched as Mendoza pretended to pull a trigger, clicking his tongue.
Stop! Oh my God, stop it!
Tony shrieked, grabbing hold of her husband as he tried to step to Mendoza. Elodie's eyes were wide, shocked as she stared at them. She had probably only seen the sweet Mendoza, not the man with his finger on a trigger. If she thought this was bad, maybe she wasn't really ready for Phillips to come home after all.
Fuck this. I'm going. Come on, Elodie,
Fisher said to her.
You guys are all dicks. Elodie, I'm going to get an Uber and I'll take you home.
Where are you sleeping?
She asked him, concern clear in her voice. I wondered the same.
Martin's,
Fisher said, seeming to realize that I was still here. He seemed overwhelmed, but didn't want to be in the middle of conflict. Basic training would beat that out of him. I hoped he kept some diplomacy to him. It would help him in the future as a leader if he stayed in and stepped up. Let's go. I'll take you both. The party's over anyway. I looked around the mess of the yard. Glass shards, chip bags, paper plates everywhere. We'll take Mendoza first, then you, I said to Fisher and Elodie.
You can leave the gifts here and I'll bring them by later, Tony said, motioning toward the table.
There weren't many gifts, and none were too big. Just a few bags and one box wrapped in polka dot paper.
We can take the gifts, Fisher said and started collecting them.
Elodie was quiet as she hugged Tony goodbye and she grabbed two small gift bags to carry to the car. Tony apologized, saying how she would have driven Elodie home, but couldn't because the kids were asleep, not because she had had at least a bottle or two of wine to herself just since I'd arrived. The boys dispersed, saying shit under their breath. I didn't give them attention. I'd go to their commander and tell him how shit his soldiers were. That was the way to really fuck with them. My heart was beating violently,
and an unfamiliar feeling set on my chest. Was I afraid of these boys? It felt like I was, but I had no reason to be. Was it embarrassment because of my injury? Fuck this.
Let's go get more booze before the PX closes,
one of them said as they walked past. I tried to calm the racing inside my chest and stared them down to appease my pride as they left.
Fuck them. I'm sorry, Tony, but fuck them.
Mendoza hugged her, and I followed both of them inside, Elodie and Fisher behind me. I looked at Tony, her makeup smeared now, her hair frizzed and wild. I felt bad for the woman. She had a part to play, and she was trying. Her husband couldn't care less about her most of the time, and I knew he'd fucked a medic during our last deployment, more than once. I'm sure she knew what kind of shitbag her husband was. It was so obvious that she was absolutely suffering. I wondered if he was suffering like the rest of us. Like her. Like Mendoza. Like me. Hell, like Fisher, even if his trauma wasn't from the army yet. Tharp was no angel, but we'd gone to hell twice together, and that changes a man. His wife stood there staring at him, her eyes heavy and tired. She'd made a life out of being a military spouse, from family readiness group meetings to cookouts to play dates with the other wives. I was a single soldier, and even so, I still knew she was a busybody who liked to gossip and buzz around, but she did a lot for us, always sending care packages and making sure our company had the best cookouts and shit. Her husband was right on the fence between being a total prick and not. He wasn't my favorite, but he wasn't the worst. We had lived together with 6 other guys during the first deployment. I didn't have a lot of one-on-one time with him since there wasn't much free time during war. He spent his with a group of medic girls who were usually average-looking, but in a desert while you were trying to stay alive, they were suddenly the hottest women on the planet to a group of horny men. Phillips, Mendoza, and I stayed out of trouble and out of the medics, literally. Of all my boys, only Phillips was left in Afghanistan. Damn. It was wild to think of him over there, starting over, working with a new group of people like nothing had happened. I hoped he was behaving, especially while watching his pregnant wife struggling to try to carry what was left of her cake to the back door. The rest of us came home after the last mission. The one that not only wiped out half of our guys, but most of our minds. And my body. The mission we weren't supposed to think about or speak about. The one Karina was entangled in now, no matter how hard I tried to keep her away from all of it. Her dad's mistakes were chasing both of his kids down. Let's go. Cab's leaving, I told them as Elodie, one arm hugged Tony for the third time. Fisher grabbed the rest of the bags and followed Elodie out the front door. He was clueless about the shit his dad was covering up, and I was done meddling in the Fisher family's drama and needed to get as far away as I could. I lifted up the polka dot box and tucked it under my arm. I wanted to get the hell out of there and into my bed. The day had gone on for too fucking long. See you around. Thanks for having me, I told Tony as I passed her. She sighed. Thanks for coming. Her hand lifted halfway into the air before she gave up, sensing my do not touch me vibe, dropping it to her side. It was almost 10 and I had an appointment in the morning. Fisher was due to demo the bathroom of the other side of my duplex while I would be at a discharge meeting where they taught a group of us soldiers how to fill out job applications. Lowe's, Home Depot, local police forces, security jobs. Those were the options they gave me for my future. At just 21 and with a heavy diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder and a fucked up leg, not many places would jump at the chance to hire me. The back of my truck was partly full again, with the gifts. Mendoza was standing by the open truck. Sorry, hands are full, he said as I approached. He had taken a bottle of Maker's Mark from the table without my noticing. He took a swig of it. You're putting that shit away while I drive or you're not getting in, I warned him. I wasn't about to get arrested or assaulted by the MPs again. Elodie told us that she wanted to sit in the back seat in case she got motion sickness,
and Mendoza wanted to sit up front so he didn't have to contend with a pregnant woman who might get car sick. Fisher slid in next to Elodie, and I turned on to the street that would take us to the other side of Post, a short drive to Mendoza's housing village.
"What a bunch of douchebags," he said when the four of us were in my truck.
"On the floor," I told Mendoza, looking at the liquor still in his hand.
"Okay, Jesus, you're worse than my old lady," he said, groaning, but obeyed.
"They weren't so bad, just toward the end," Elodie said, trying to make the best of her ruined baby shower.
I knew that Karina should have been in charge of it.
"They were lucky I didn't want to put that bottle down,"
Mendoza fake punched the air, and Elodie giggled in the back. "You better put those fists down before your wife whoops your ass," I said, nodding to his house when we pulled up a few minutes later. Gloria, now in her pajamas, walked down the porch and toward us the moment my tires touched the driveway. I guess she'd heard my exhaust rumbling as we drove up. That was the only thing I hated about my truck. It was fucking loud. She wrapped her arm around her husband's back as we all told him goodnight. He was slurring now, drinking from the bottle the second he was out of my car. As their front door shut, Fisher's eyes caught mine in the rearview mirror.
"Should we be worried about him?"
he asked, his voice soft. I put my gear shift in reverse and looked back at him. "Yes, we should be," I said, wondering if I would be back there later that night.
Chapter 21. Karina. His kiss was sweet enough that when he kissed me, the salt in the water around us turned to sugar, Elodie said, reading aloud from a little poetry book I had bought when I lived in Texas. She'd found it in the couch that morning when we were vacuuming under the cushions. We had been cleaning the living room all day and getting ready to paint. I even moved the furniture. Elodie obviously didn't move any heavy stuff since she was pregnant. Instead, she dusted every part of the room and helped by tidying the books on the shelves under the TV, wiping each one down with a rag and whatever brand of non-chemical Lysol she'd found at Target. It felt good to clean things out, but it was already late in the day, and I hoped my enthusiasm wouldn't burn out before we had our planned movie night. I had this urge for change lately. I needed it. I was unsettled, I could feel it, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to feel at ease until the space surrounding me was different. Like I could erase the memory of Kale, of my ex Brian, of everything. The dark colors in my living room needed a refresh, kind of like my new hair and my new chair. Elodie and I both had off work today because Molly had closed the spa for the week while her daughter was having a baby. I had just gone on my Starbucks run of the day to make us feel extra productive and pinned a bunch of pictures on a Pinterest board without knowing that all of my Facebook friends could see every single one. They seemed to like what I was posting, and my phone kept going off as they repinned or saved the stuff I was finding. Of course, on my tiny budget, my house would never look like the Pinterest board of my dreams, but anything would be better than the random blend of decor I had collected over the years. Some of it would stay, but most needed to go. I had entered a new phase. As of today, the new carefree, light and airy Karina, who didn't overthink everything, was going with the flow and focusing on her own life. Spending hours on Instagram looking at motivational, self-help, and mental health memes inspired me. So it was tan and light gray pillows from Target, a concrete table decoration, even if I wasn't exactly clear on what it was, and anything that had a chill tone to it, whatever that felt like in the moment. I began to paint the walls a creme brulee color from some old paint cans that had been under the kitchen sink since I bought my house. The original plan had been to paint the entire living room and kitchen today, but it ended up taking way longer than I expected. As the paint dried, I dragged the couch across the floor and moved it to the wall that separated the kitchen and living room. Over the last few days since I had found the flea market, I had been subtly moving things around. Today was the payoff. We took the painter's tape off the baseboards and plopped down on the clean couch. I had successfully distracted myself from obsessing over Kale for a few days. He came and went inside my mind, but I was almost at the end of it. I hoped. After a short rest and some more vacuuming, Elodie returned to the little poetry book and became fascinated with it. I went through a poetry phase when I was 18-ish and had spent an entire summer thinking I was going to either become a poet or marry one. She was the electricity that kept me going. But what I did not know was that I shared her with him. His ghost claimed more of her than I did, until they vanished together. How melodramatic, I huffed, remembering how deep that little book had felt when I'd read it over and over that summer. Back then, every poem had spoken to me personally. Now it all sounded so different. I had tied my own meaning to it back then, when my problems seemed so small compared to now. At that time in my life, I had no clue what love was. Not even close.
Oh, come on, Karina, don't be such a downer.
She pressed the little book to her chest.
These are beautiful.
Sure, I snorted. I loved them when I read them, but I'm done wasting my time chasing some fairy tale man who doesn't exist on planet Earth. Elodie rolled her gorgeous eyes. The blue cotton romper she was wearing made her eyes even brighter than usual. She was stunning in a casual, breathtaking way, inside and out.
No duh, but we can at least pretend and read poems and things to make us long for it. Romance has to live somewhere, even if it's not in our lives.
As she said it, she slid the book onto a shelf between my old textbook, Trail Guide to the Body, and another poetry book that I last recalled seeing covered in dust.
How are things with Martin?
She asked with her back to me, rubbing a cloth along the entertainment center. The same as before, non-existent. I tossed the pillows back onto the couch. The living room was almost done, and my back and head hurt. She frowned.
But even after the other day? He hasn't called you or anything?
What do you mean the other day? I'd never spoken so fast in my life. Her eyes widened.
The market?
Great. So Kale had told her. Jealousy, annoyance, embarrassment, violation all rose up.
He's a good man, Karina. You're not thinking clearly, and he's too stubborn.
Both of you are. I got really defensive, really fast. He doesn't give a shit about me, okay? So no, he hasn't called or texted or come by, and he's not going to. Her face turned sad.
I'm sure that's not why he...
Elodie, look. We are friends. You're maybe my closest friend, but I don't want to talk about Kale. Not with you, not with anyone. How many times do I have to tell you this? I could talk about some stuff with Elodie, sure. Some personal shit about my dad, sometimes little things about my mom, whatever about my brother. But the idea of her or anyone knowing every part of my life made me want to vomit. I didn't like people knowing my weaknesses, and I didn't like Elodie reminding me of Kale or smiling and giving me false hope while asking about him. I'm sorry, but I won't be able to get over it if I keep talking about it, I told her. Her face was full of concern for me. It was a confusing experience, the way the tables felt like they were turning. Normally, it was I who worried about her, not the other way around.
Who do you talk to then? Because you just stay alone in this house and you don't talk to anyone. You need to make an online dating profile, or at least use Instagram more.
I talk to people. In truth, I didn't have anyone I wanted to bother or trust with my problems.
Who?
She smiled, softly testing me. I sat down on the couch, leaving the middle cushion open between us. Who cares? Also, I'm not dating on an app or on Instagram. She rolled her eyes.
Instagram is an app.
Shh. I waved my hand in the air. I knew I had to meet her in the middle. With her being overly emotional and me wanting to bury my feelings, I had to find the balance. I did it with my mom a lot, and with most people, except Kale, whose name was gaining way too much power in my house right now.
I'm not concerned, really.
Elodie paused and looked around the room, to the painted wall, to the new chair. Then she looked me up and down.
But you're redoing the house and your hair and style.
Yeah? And? You're having a baby with a man you barely know. Things are changing everywhere. As soon as the words came out, I bit my tongue. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Elodie, on top of being the most gentle person I'd ever met, was also the most understanding. She just nodded and moved on, despite my awful words to her just seconds ago. I just want you to be happy, okay? I am happy. I got 2 new clients this week, and I have purple nails and fresh hair and that chair. I'm good. I pointed to my favorite item in my house, but even that had the memory of Kale embroidered on it. Purple nails? Now you're reaching. She looked at her phone and laughed. You should date online. Tony asked me if you're on Tinder. Why is Tony talking about my dating life? I don't even know her. I lifted my body a little to sit on my knees on the couch. Elodie acted offended. It came up. Someone asked if you were single. She was actually complimenting you. Chill out. You chill, was the only thing I could say. Stupid, but I was defending myself. She was the one talking about me with her lame-ass friends. She shrugged her slender shoulders. I'm chill, I'm just checking on you. She didn't seem pissed. Her response was calm, if forward as hell. Well, I'm fine, okay? You and Tony don't have to worry about me. I'm fine. Can she go back to planning baby showers and cookouts and whatever bullshit she does all day? I don't like the idea of you and Kale and Tony and God knows who else just sitting around talking about my life, okay? Elodie's smile went away. You're being way too judgmental about them. You know, she told me she invited you to the baby shower on Facebook and you didn't even open her message. Facebook? I don't even check my messages on Facebook, Elodie. I threw my hands up and let them drop at my sides. What the hell is happening with the world that Facebook is the only way to send baby shower invites and Instagram is used to meet men? It wasn't Elodie's fault that she saw the good in everyone, even me. She was smiling again. We rarely argued. In fact, I could hardly remember ever even getting annoyed with her. She was one of the very few people I felt that way about. I'm just saying. I also invited you before I knew it was for the baby. And Tony just wants you to like her, that's all. Why would she care if I like her? She doesn't even know me. And I had no desire to get to know her. What's with these women? Because you're like the cool girl, so she wants to impress you. I laughed. Me? The cool girl? Yes. Since you don't care if they like you, they want you to like them. Not like me. Because I wanted them to like me, they didn't. You are all... She slowly shook her shoulder-length hair back and forth like she was in a shampoo commercial, and changed her voice to what I assumed was supposed to be mine. All... I don't care. It sounded deep and ridiculous. And you dress all cool and you got Martin's attention when everyone thought he was going to stay single. He never even looks at other girls, and trust me, they all look at him. What do they know about me and Kale? And how? Ugh, news always traveled so fast around posts. Benning was no exception. I hoped Elodie wasn't the one telling them about my personal life. I trusted her, and it never even crossed my mind that she would talk about me with her new friends. I purposely stayed out of friend groups because of these types of issues. I preferred my drama to come from television or a romance novel. Not much. Just that he was into you and you ended it. But when people don't know the story, they make up their own. That was so true. My mom had a saying. The gossiping mouth is never full. Or something like that. I stood up from the couch. Yeah, well, they aren't going to get any details. There aren't any anyway. Okay? Elodie raised her hands up, smiling in defeat. Fine. Thank you. I gave her a sarcastic smile back. I busied myself by moving my new chair over a few inches, then back to where it was in the first place. And then I half pondered where it should really be, and half ignored my well-meaning roommate.
"So can I make you a Tinder profile?" she asked.
"No, oh my God." I shook my head.
"No way. I don't want a date right now."
She raised her brow.
"Right now? Or ever?"
"Both?" I laughed.